We're the Kitchen Sisters. I'm Davia Nelson.
And I'm Nikki Silva.
And we've been doing radio stories together for some 30 years, interviewing hundreds and hundreds of people. And every time we interview somebody, we always ask them to sing. We always ask them about the music in their life, the soundtrack in their life. And out of people singing comes these revelations, these truths, these beauties.
One of the earliest pieces we worked on together, Davia and I, was a piece about home recordings. And I interviewed my mom.
Why do robins sing long before the springtime is due? I know why, and so do you. That's it. I can't remember whether it was during the war or just after the war. We were in Santa Cruz at the boardwalk. You know how you take a picture? You stick a dime in and you get three little pictures out. Well, you stick a quarter in and the thing would drop down and you'd start singing. And when it went off, you stopped singing. If you were lucky enough to time it right, you ended when the record ended. It only cost a quarter and it was fun. And of course, I just thought I was Ella Fitzgerald.
She had made one of these home recordings in a penny arcade. We'd found a home recording in my dad's garage. It was the first one we'd ever seen. We didn't know what it was. It was a 78 record, but it had handwriting on it. And I asked my dad what it was. And he said, I think your mother made a few of them. In fact, she sent me one during the war.
You know, we started realizing pretty early on that, I mean, I think we started asking people to sing because we just love music so much. And it was just, I don't think we ever imagined you could do a story without music in it. Then somewhere along the way, Nikki's mother, all kinds of people that we would talk to, we'd realize when we'd hear them sing instantaneously so much emotion that it would take hours for someone to describe the kind of longing or dreams or fulfilled and unfulfilled parts, the theatrical parts of somebody, the just what's in that tone of voice.
When I listen to my mom sing now, I have such mixed feelings about it because I'm so transported. I see her, I feel her, I know exactly who she is when I hear her sing, and I also realize how much of her life she never realized who she was. And somehow that singing, she was always so full of grace and life when she sang, and that really came through.
All those things just showed so much, that revealed so much about their inner life, and it brought the stories to life, getting those soundtracks.
Whoa, 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 little girl, how happy I would be if some merry girl could win your love for me, win your love for me.
Another story that we did for the Hidden Kitchen series was called King's Candy, a New Orleans kitchen vision. And it's the story of Robert King Wilkerson, who was in Angola Penitentiary for 31 years, 29 of them in solitary confinement, and who kept his equilibrium making this clandestine candy and singing to himself, having this soundtrack inside his head.
Stories of food we found, you know, asking people about what they had for breakfast, for instance, which is the classic line most journalists ask, audio journalists ask, when they're warming up their equipment and checking their levels, what did you have for breakfast? You know, stories of food, stories of music, they get very quickly to the point.
Sam Cooke, I think I was drawn more to his music than anything. The last big song that came out before he was killed, I Was Born by the River. Yeah, I was born by the river in a little tent. That's like the river I've been running for since.
Oh, and just like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know.
He goes to a movie, and he go downtown, and someone are always telling him, don't hang around. I could visualize Sam being born in a certain time, going to a movie that was strictly white. It kind of reminded me of when I was in Dallas and I finally met up with my father, the man who had sired me, however you want to put it. I can't say he was a father. But I was 12 years old. There was a movie. Blacks couldn't go in the movie. And not that I wanted to go in it or anything like that, but you're passing by. That record reminded me of so much of maybe myself.
Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
When he sang and talked a little bit about his dream of being a singer and his love and passion for Sam Cooke, it suddenly opened up this whole man in a very intimate way, made him very real, very accessible, not like a prisoner, not like someone who had been, you know, squirreled away forever that you can't really identify, not a violent man, a very gentle man, and also revealed so much about his life story in talking about this music, in talking about Sam Cooke, and how Sam Cooke was really a mirror for him.
I was fascinated with sugar. I used to watch Mama make candy with pecans and sugar and water. But it wasn't until some years later, when I first went to prison, I was cooking in the kitchen. This guy was in the bakery. He could bake all kind of pastries, make all kind of candy. I was fascinated with the candy. What I saw before my eyes was like a science being revealed. My name is Robert King Wilkerson. We used to get milk practically every day, or butter, margarine. Wasn't really butter, and sugar. They would put it on your tray whether you drank coffee or not. So I used to get the guys to save the sugar. Sometime I was fortunate enough to get pecans. They got a lot of pecan trees around Angola, and they had some officers, once they taste the candy, making sure I had pecans. We would bribe the orderly. Sometimes you'd get a fruit can, peach can, but most of the time it was Coke cans. They were easy to get. Just peel the top, and then peel another can, triple it up, maybe 18 inches long, and have toilet paper, roll it up, and turn it into like a burner. It might take a day or two, maybe three, but it'll harden. I was definitely hidden. I couldn't let them know I was really doing it. They would come in, conduct a shakedown, and get the pot, get the can and everything else, and then write you up. I kind of enjoyed the thrill of going outside the box a little bit, making candy, and then giving it away, you know. Especially guys on death row, because I just wanted them to have something that they hadn't had in a long time.
Good afternoon. This is
and so we chronicled his story, especially he had gotten out of prison and gone back to New Orleans where he was from and had no, after 31 years in prison, no real means, no real skills to really make it in the world, and who's going to hire an ex-felon with that kind of prison time. And he came out, he'd always loved to cook, and he knew how to make these candies. And that's the story we told.
Sardines, and pork and beans, 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 sardines on my plate, and I don't want no steak, sardines, and pork and beans, sardines,
every morning by the riverside.
Sardines,
eating sardines by my side.
Sardines,
every morning by the river place.
Sardines,
eating sardines with an extra plate.
Sardines on my plate, and I don't want no steak. Sardines,
We love that song. Sardines and Pork and Beans was recorded in the 60s at a day camp in Harlem. Is Jenny Johnson and her group. Something about the way those girls sing that song, we can just see it. You know those girls have been singing back and forth since the day they first met, and Jenny's the boss, and she's got the pipes and no accompaniment, just their voices, and they're just back and forth, and all their, just all those hot summer days with time to kill. We heard that when we were DJs on a radio station in Santa Cruz on KUSP, and we played music every week on our show, and we were always looking for those kind of field recordings as well as professional ones, but we've always just been drawn to the voice.
That's all I eat is sardines, and pork and beans, sardines, and pork and beans, sardines. And pork and beans, sardines.
Like food, music is just such an opener. You can try and talk philosophy and different points of view and politics till you're blue in the face, but the right lyrics from the right poet, from with the right tune at the right time, can just open people's minds to such new ideas, in the same way that the right taste or smell of food just opens your memory, opens your heart, connects people in this way that few things do. Music and food cross that divide. And the rhythm. There's something about rhythm and rhyme and all those cadences that just also, what is that Plato quote? I think, he who controls rhythm controls. And I think that's also the power of music as well, is just that, it's the heartbeat.
Come and sit by my slightly straddling, do not house and to beat me as you. Just remember the Red River Valley and the cowboy who love you so too. And the cowboy who love you so too. And the cowboy who love you so too.
We did a series called Lost and Found Sound, how recorded sound shaped history and history was shaped by sound. And there's a place in San Francisco I go to get manicures. And this, over the years, I've gotten to know this woman, Shirley. And one day it occurred to me, she's from Vietnam. Why is her name Shirley? And as she was doing the manicure, she proceeded to tell this story of how her family fled Vietnam, how she came to the river to get on the boat, or to the harbor to get on the boat, and was separated from her mother and her brother. And this was when she was a young girl, about 12 or so. And she winds up on a boat and coming to America by herself, pretty much falling apart, going crazy, comes to San Francisco, is hospitalized. And while she's in the hospital, there's a TV on, and she sees these black and white images of this little girl dancing, singing, and she doesn't understand any of it, but she hears this song, she sees this girl dance, and she realizes she's in America, she's alone, she has to be happy now, because this little girl is happy, and the way you have to be in America is happy. And so she comes to know that that's Shirley Temple, and so she changes her name to Shirley. So that led Nikki and I on a quest for a story that we came to call French Manicure, Tales from Vietnamese Nail Salons in America. It turns out music is that motivating force. Music as something that helps change your life, helps you find your path.
So when we began to think about the manicuring story, we began thinking about the soundtrack of immigration and how people shed the sounds of where they were, how they long for those sounds, and how they take on new sounds, how new sounds in this country impact who they are, the music, the language tapes that they're using to try and fit into a new culture, the sounds of radio, the sounds of television, the quiet in this country compared to the noisy streets of their own, the sort of shut doors of the neighborhoods versus the action on the street. All those kinds of sound references came up in this story for us. But one of the most powerful things was the fact that, in a lot of ways, our soundtracks were identical. I mean, they were listening to the sounds of the 60s and music as we were, and it completely took us by surprise. I mean, we never expected walking in to this story that we were both listening to California Dreaming.
Nhà, chỗ ở.
The home.
Cảm giác.
The feeling.
Âm thanh.
The sound.
I am a lineman for the county.
I left Vietnam in 1972. I listened to the radio when I was in high school. I was still in Vietnam that time. I lost a U.S. troop during the Vietnam War. I really love the song, you know, played by Glen Campbell, Wichita Lineman, and all the songs from Bee Gees, from Beatles, Rolling Stone. I love. When I was young, I heard a song, you know, California Dream. I thought, wow, San Francisco, everybody wearing their flower in their hair. I make my wish. When I grow up, I like to come to the United States. I like to live in San Francisco. See, I can get flower on my hair. That's the California Dreaming, the song. But when I come here in 1979, oh, it is hard. I have no relative, just like a couple friends, they help me. I'm not able to be speaking very, very well. So every day when I'm driving, I put a tape in my radio so I'm listening.
And this one woman just had music inside of her.
And I need you more than want you. And I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line.
She understood English pretty well, but not entirely, but she could just sing cowboy songs. She just felt those songs, and who knows what she really knew, but she knew that song spoke to her.
Because we don't narrate our work, we're looking for these musical ways in and out of things, and a texture and a layering of sound. The musicality of these things, like language tapes and like someone slating a tape, an old home recording at the top with tape 604 or whatever they say, that becomes as much a part of the musical palette for us in producing as the actual words that someone that we're interviewing is saying. One great example is this Tennessee Williams piece that we produced. One poem, Heavenly Grass. It was such a beautiful recording. There was so much static, and it became more and more invisible. It was as if it was disappearing in your ears. And we began wondering how it was that we were going to get people to really hear the words and understand what the poem was. We wanted Tennessee to do it, but it was difficult to hear. Well, it turns out that this poem and a whole series of his poems were set to music by Paul Bowles, and we were able to find these recordings of Heavenly Grass being sung. And then we had one of Tennessee Williams' close friends read the poem as well. And we did this overlay of Tennessee and the Paul Bowles composition and his friend reading the poem. And it became this way of, you know, sort of revealing the depth of that poem in a very musical way. And if we just used the tape of Tennessee, I don't think it ever could have had the resonance, or you never really would have understood the full beauty and music of that poem.
6A4, Heavenly Grass. The speaker is Tennessee Williams.
I wish to go walk in heavenly grass all day while the skies don't clear as glass. I seek to go walk in heavenly grass all night while the stars go past. Then my feet come down to walk on earth. My mother cried when they heard. Now my feet walk far and my feet walk fast, but they still got to get the heavenly grass.
In heavenly grass.
He did write those lyrics intended to be set to music, which Paul Bowles did. Bowles did the music for The Glass Menagerie, but he also did the music for the poems that Tennessee wrote called Blue Mountain Ballads.
Heavenly grass, my feet took a walk in heavenly grass all night while the distant stars rolled past. My feet came down and walked on earth, and my mother cried when she gave me birth.
We think of our radio stories as pieces of music. They're composed. They have a Some are operas, and some are country western songs, and some are soul ballads, and some are corridos, and there's just all kinds of music under. I mean, we don't consciously say, now we will create a corrido, but they take on their own life and shape.
Many years ago, we did a program about lullabies, but really lullabies are sort of a through line in a lot of the pieces that we've done. And, you know, we've gathered recorded lullabies, but some of the most meaningful and true and revelatory lullabies are those we've just asked people to sing that we've interviewed. And we always ask people to sing. I mean, in almost every interview, I can barely think of one that we've done that we haven't asked people to sing. And we'll just ask them generally, and often we'll zero down to, do you know any lullabies?
Hush, baby, hush. Mama gonna market fi buy Coca-Cola. Hush, lady, hush. Say, mama gonna market fi buy Coca-Cola. Papa gonna bush fi go look the wood. So mama soon come with sweet, sweet candy. Mama soon come with the sweet, sweet candy. Hush, baby, hush. Pass the nipple back and make me give you feeding. So hush, lady, hush. So give me a little bottle, let me give you the feeding, so hush, baby, hush, you know?
Herbert was selling aloe vera on the beach in Jamaica to sunburnt tourists and just had this beautiful sing-songy way of saying, aloe vera for sale. And then we just said, do you know any lullabies? And out came Hush, Baby, Hush. Mama's going to market to buy Coca-Cola. I mean, that line, I think, is just stuck.
I think about that one, that lullaby, about so many of the lullabies, is it's this intensely personal moment. It's singing to your baby. It's singing to your child and teaching your child to speak, really, through these songs. It's communicating this deep, deep feeling. It's often full of anxiety, trying to get them to sleep. It's often full of frustration. And I was with my mom when she died, and I sang to her. You know, so it's this full circle. You know, it's this, what you do with someone when words don't work.
Hush, baby, hush, you know. So mama gonna market me by Coca-Cola. Papa gonna bush, we gonna look up the wood. Catch up the fire, put on the pot. Till mama come back, your belly will be full, so hush, baby, hush. Mama gonna market. Hush, lady, hush.
You know, we always keep an ear to the ground for songs and for stories about songs and people who have music at the center of their life. And you can't miss Brian Eno if you're looking at people who where music and sound and recording is in their heart. And we bumped into this story that Brian had written about singing and singing with your friends, a cappella singing, and it just sort of captured so much of what we feel and believe. And
it's kind of an accelerated intimacy where you go from 0 to 60 with someone emotionally. When they sing, you somehow get the pain, the joy, all those mixed emotions that someone would take quite a long time and a lot of therapy to describe to you. It sort of comes across in that moment of singing.
And so we recorded him, telling his truth, his singing manifesto.
I believe in singing. I believe in singing together. A few years ago, my friend and I realized that we both loved singing, but didn't do enough of it. So we started a weekly a cappella group with just 4 members. After a year, we invited others to join. We didn't insist on musical experience. In fact, some of our members had never sung before. Now the group has ballooned to around 15, 20 people. I believe that singing is the key to long life, a good figure, a stable temperament, increased intelligence, new friends, increased self-confidence, heightened sexual attractiveness, and a better sense of humor. There, that got you listening. But it wasn't all made up. A 30-year study conducted in Scandinavia sought to discover which activities seemed to relate to a healthy and happy old age. Three stood out: camping, dancing, and singing. There are indeed physiological benefits. You use your lungs in a way that you probably don't for the rest of the day. You breathe deeply and openly. And there are psychological benefits. Singing aloud leaves you with a sense of levity and contentedness. And then there are what I'd call civilizational benefits. When you sing with a group of people, you learn how to subsume yourself into a group consciousness, because a cappella singing is all about the immersion of the self into the community. That's one of the great feelings, to stop being me for a little while and to become us. That way lies empathy, the great social virtue. You want songs that are word-rich and also vowel-rich, because it's on the long vowels of a song, such as Bring It On Home To Me. You know I'll always be your slave, that your harmonies express themselves. But a cappella singing is not only about the harmonization of pitch. It has two other important dimensions. The first is rhythm. It's very thrilling when you get all the rhythm of something right and sing it well together. So it makes sense to choose songs that are rhythmically interesting. The second is tone. To be able to hit exactly the same vowel sound at a number of different pitches seems unsurprising in concept, but is beautiful when it happens. If I were asked to redesign the British educational system, I'd start by insisting that group singing becomes a central part of the daily routine. I believe it builds character, and more than anything else, encourages a taste for cooperation with others. This seems to me about the most important thing a school could give you.